You're listening to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, where we talk about what it means to be en route with Jesus in our day-to-day life. Navigating life and faith in our complex and changing society is hard. Our goal is to keep you unterwegs with Jesus, moving forward as you follow God's calling on your life. Hi there, I'm your host, Mike Piccinato, and we are going to jump right into part two of a series that we started recording last week with my kids and Dr. Stephen Jones. Here's that episode. Welcome back to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast. This is episode 31, and I'm joined again this week by Dr. Stephen Jones, author of multiple books, including the Cross-Cultural Transition Handbook.
Hello.
And also joined again by my two adult children, Johanna and Caleb.
How are you?
Hi.
I gotta say, it's a little upsetting to not get as impressive an introduction as Stephen here. I guess I haven't earned it.
But... author of multiple ninth grade essays.
Yeah, there you go.
Last week, we talked a little bit about identity and what that means and the whole questions of who are you and where are you from and how's it like to be home and some of those identity pieces of transitioning across cultures. And today, I'd like to go back with you guys a little bit and talk about what it was like as a kid. Last week, full disclosure, you said you don't remember a lot about what it was like as a kid, but I'll just ask some questions and see if it sparks some memories about what it was like as a kid to come into a different culture. And so maybe I'll start just with that general question. What do you remember about 12-year-old Johanna and 9-year-old Caleb when we first got on the airplane and flew over to Berlin?
Okay, nothing.
I remember.
The airplane, no.
I have this very vague memory of like being in the Minneapolis airport and rolling suitcases, and that's about it.
I remember packing.
I remember like the day... I was very enthusiastic. I remember about the day or two after when we landed and had some very like rainy, haily experiences when you were going phone shopping.
That was the day we landed.
Okay, remember the day we landed. Also, going phone shopping, playing around. I mean, parents going phone shopping and then playing with the phone, like the display phone, because they had some game on it. And I couldn't get a good grip on it. So I just kind of unplugged it and held it. And I think all the alarms in the store went off. And that's about it.
I don't remember why the alarms went off. You were playing a game on it.
No, because I unplugged it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I remember basically falling asleep in like, I thought I was hiding from you guys. And now I remember like hiding from the shop. And now I realize in retrospect, like the same phone shop experience kind of thing. There was like a poster in front of the window. I was kind of curled up behind the poster, but realizing now it was in the window, so everybody walking past saw a passed out little 12-year-old in the phone shop.
I like to think we were something to look at. I mean,
I do know we were tired enough to turn down ice cream. If we stay awake long enough, then we get ice cream, and we're like, I want to go to sleep.
I remember staying awake and being proud of it.
Do you remember anything about that trying to find an apartment process? Because we had no housing when we showed up.
Yeah, I remember we were staying in a friend of a friend's apartment. And I do remember when we first, I don't think we went along on many like apartment searches, I think. But I do remember like when we first found our apartment that we have now, there was still like construction workers doing work in the bathroom and stuff.
There was a urinal instead of a shower, which I think we should have just done both, but we had to get rid of the urinal. Probably better in the long run.
It's tough to shower in a urinal.
It is.
It is.
It definitely does create another layer of uncertainty when you're moving in and you're not moving to an apartment. And I can't imagine how it would have been also for you guys. I mean, for me, I was like, all right, I mean, I'll lean back and let the parents figure this out. But I even knew, like when I was moving back to the U.S., I was staying with grandparents. So it was, you know, kind of an indefinite amount of time that I had to find an apartment. But I didn't have an apartment when I was moving back. And that was enough stress for just me personally. I didn't even have any kids to look after with that. But yeah.
I'm curious, Mike, you and I also both moved internationally as kids. Like, do you remember the settling in process?
I remember how fast it always seemed for us, because mom and dad got to be such professionals at it that I remember it being but it's different in a military move, mm-hmm. because the military moves your possessions as well. And so there was always a sense of familiarity with the move. All of your stuff showed up and you were just finding new places for the old stuff. And so I remember just getting to be professionals at unpacking and settling in really fast, so that within a matter of a couple of weeks, when you know you only have 2 or 3 years out of space, but it's even sometimes less than that in Navy families, but you show up and it's quickly unpack and settle in and start living there before you have to start packing up again.
Yeah, I don't know why, for some reason, when we moved to Japan, there wasn't housing for us. And so we ended up having to stay in the Navy Lodge, which is kind of like a hotel for, I don't know, a month or two. And I do remember there was a whole bunch that happened. And at that same time, my grandpa got really sick mm-hmm. right after we moved. So we moved to Japan and then maybe a month later came back to Connecticut, which is a long ways yeah. away. And then we're on our way back to Japan and then he died. And so we went back to Connecticut. Mm. And then on the way back to Japan, my dad got called directly to the ship. And so it was just me and my sister, my mom went back to Japan and still didn't have a house. And so I remember going house wow. hunting with her.
That's...
And then we lived off base for the first year. So I do have some pretty specific memories. One of the most specific is that on that trip back to Japan, we had landed and I remember throwing up at the end of one of those moving walkways, like ooh. With all the people behind me. So that was neat. I feel like what we're talking about sounds super basic, but there is something about the physicality mm-hmm. of moving, right? That's just so disruptive to the world of a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, you go and you sit in this airplane for, you know, a bunch of hours and then you show up somewhere else and the smells are different and the water's different. I mean, it's just like everything is so different. And then, you know, your young body trying to like make sense of everything. And your parents are usually super stressed. And, you know, I mean, there's just all of this stuff. And
I remember being unbearably hot. One of those, was that the first day we got there? Or one of the first days where we were in Berlin. And it was probably like at least 90s. And all of us, I think it was the day we got there and we didn't have like summer clothes out or anything like that. So we were all just, everybody was grumpy, tired,
that was my
exhausted.
Birthday.
That was your birthday. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So it was a few weeks after we landed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had found the apartment, but we weren't in it yet. We had just gone by.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you'll resonate with this. I had to sell guitars off before we could come because, and we'll touch on this with you guys too in just a minute, but the idea of we cut our possessions down to some things in storage in the US and everything we could fit in, I think we came with 12 suitcases and one of those was my guitar. Mm-hmm. And so I had sold off a bass, I had sold off an electric guitar and had come just with my acoustic guitar. And we were going to go find a base and we couldn't mm-hmm. find the shop and we were walking and we were all so hungry and it was my birthday and it was like just
miserable just, birthday.
Oh my word. One of my two most miserable birthdays.
It gets worse.
Yeah. Yeah. The one where you guys were all puking and I had reservations and to go to a restaurant. Yeah. So that was that miserable day we were shopping for a guitar. But coming back to the cutting down on possessions, do you guys remember... Two things. Do you remember the sorting through of your stuff to come?
This is where I was
come?
Saying, like, mm-hmm. oh, sorry, say the second thing. Go ahead.
Well, let's go with the sorting down. And
yeah, no, that's what I was saying. I don't remember flying. I remember the packing because we had different boxes. We had a box for, like, keep, store, giveaway / throw away.
Or sell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember just every single thing had to go into a mm-hmm. box and reaching a point where I was like, I can't decide. So this is all going in like this one box here. Like I can't, I am done with decision making. I'm worn mm-hmm. out. I'm tired. And then so some of that stuff ended up coming here. And then when we were packing up to go to the US altogether for that 1 year, looking at some of the stuff I'd brought with me and wondering, why do I have this? Or showing up back there and seeing at the stuff we stored and being like, why on earth would 12-year-old me store this? That makes no sense.
I can't remember much of that first process of moving, except that I lost one of my favorite stuffed animals that probably got in the wrong box or something. And I was very, very torn up about that for a few months and then still probably for at least a year or two afterwards. But I think the second time we left in 2017. I remember going through a lot of the stuff like, oh, I want to bring this, but I can't. This I can't bring. This, that sorting process. But it was a lot different because we had a place where we knew we were coming back to and where I knew I could keep a lot of the same stuff.
What about the process of having your space, having your rooms, and then going to IKEA and shopping and starting to pick out furniture for your room?
So now I enjoy IKEA. I've gotten over the IKEA trauma.
I have not.
At the time, I remember I was so ticked off because both of the boys were young enough to go to the playrooms.
I don't think I was.
You were.
I was?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Both of the boys were young enough to go to the playrooms. And so, but I wasn't. So I had to walk along for hours. It felt like weeks. It felt like months in IKEA while everybody was looking for, you know, we were looking for everything to furnish an apartment. We didn't bring kitchen supplies. We didn't bring sheets and everything. You know, we got everything that we could possibly think of except for like maybe a dining room table.
Did you have to buy your kitchen too?
No, part thankfully. Of, just part of, but
yeah, having to get absolutely everything at IKEA and me being interested in maybe two of it. Like I just wanted a bed and a dresser and that was all. And I had to be lugged around on the whole journey. I hated IKEA so much for so long after that.
I definitely do remember walking a lot in IKEA though.
I think one time the playroom was closed or you did not want to go back or...
I can't remember much of the process. I think being nine, it was a lot more parents kind of guiding us and then saying, do you want this or this? As instead of choose one of all of these beds. I think it was probably better that way. But
what about some of the other settling in things? Do you remember first couple of days at school when you started starting at the international school?
I don't really have a lot of memories of it. I remember having one of the first days standing there and everybody just kind of looking at me and being like, yeah, I'm here. Hi, who are you? But that's just like this, you know, fairly regular first day experiences standing there and everybody looking at you when you're the new kid. I don't really have a ton of memories from the start of that though.
I think for my first day at the international school, almost everybody was new there. So it was fairly seamless as moving to a new country and a new school can be. A slightly more traumatic experience was, well, all the bathroom work was being done in our house. I remember needing to go. And there are these very Berlin builders, workers, construction workers in the bathroom. And they're all spread out because they have to make it through to put in the new shower. And I had no clue how to ask if I can go to the bathroom. So I just stood there and asked our mom, how do I say that I have to go to the bathroom? Didn't believe her answer and just kind of waited another 30 minutes hoping that they'd eventually leave, and it never happened. And I think eventually I went in, but that was stressful. And it's not something that should be stressful or that you should think about, like going to the bathroom in your own house, but very, very stressful.
Do you have certain smells that you associate with either with back in the U.S. before you moved here or smells that remind you of having moved here?
Cow manure, funnily enough, is a very distinct American smell to me.
In the summer, yeah. It would waft over to our house. You couldn't hear it, smell it most of the time, but in summer.
I can't think of any distinct Berlin smells. And the more I think, I guess stuff like cut grass is something that's going to remind me more of Staples, where we had a lawn that our dad would go and mow. But I think I'd have to smell most smells to remember smelling them. Mm.
I don't know. I definitely think like even when I stepped out of the airport in Berlin, I do remember being like, oh, this feel like this smells like Berlin, seems like Berlin. But I don't know that I could like pinpoint what exactly it is that made it seem that way. But yeah, no, there are. It is an all senses thing. Like you were saying earlier, how it's overwhelming for a kid. I don't know that I notice it as much now, but it is definitely something you experience.
I know for me, one of the smells that takes me back to Japan is kerosene. We had a kerosene heater and I don't smell kerosene very often, but whenever I do, it's like, oh, you know, it like kind of jolts you back to that.
There's this distinct smell of cold, but especially during Minnesota winters where there's snow everywhere and icicles hanging off the rafters, I think they're called. side of the roof, I can at least totally smell that. And I don't think I've ever really had that smell in Berlin.
I don't think it's cold enough.
Cold enough here, but I guess that would be another one of those very distinct that's what my childhood smelled like smells.
Have I primed the pump enough that there are other stories or thoughts coming to mind when you think of what was it like for you to move from Minnesota to Berlin?
I think most of my memories come in starting around fifth grade for me, going into the all German school, not really the whole moving experience. I don't know if it's just been blocked out of memory, like based off of trauma, or if I just can't remember much of it. But
could I ask, one of the things that I'm curious about, like watching my own kids now going through the move, because we've been here just over 5 months, I don't think for all of them, but for at least one or two of them, the feelings of what they've left behind are still very prominent, and mm-hmm. especially friendships. Do you remember like what that was like, the leaving behind, or is that all kind of gone too?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think in general, I've become kind of jaded, or I'm just not a very good communicator, because a lot of the times I just lose contact whenever I move.
That's actually a really typical TCK
train. Yeah. When we went to the States for 1 year, my most recent example, I barely talked to any of my German friends. I maybe have like one phone call and two or three text messages between even just group chats. And then coming back here, I just kind of plugged right into the same people. And in the States, I plugged into similar groups that I had when I was 8 or 9. But in between those times, I only am really able to focus on the group I'm in.
Yeah, I don't remember as much moving here. I think, not that I didn't know anybody or didn't have friends, but I was definitely a lot more, I didn't have as many people coming from like homeschooled and only church kind of relationships and stuff. But I definitely, you know, there were people I remember trying to like call on their birthdays and stuff. I remember more, going back to the States. I remember making a conscientious decision of, I know I'm only here for a year. I might not have a lot of like communication with these people afterwards, but I'm going to try to go in and have as much of a relationship as I can with people in the time that I have. That's definitely a more solid memory that I have.
Looking forward, for me personally, it's also, even though I now do have a lot more control over where I'm going to be as a very young adult, stuff like not knowing where I want to continue college in, or where I want to spend a lot of my life, like the majority or next part of my life, and makes it harder for me to now enter new relationships, mm-hmm. in friendship wise, romantic wise. I don't want to let anyone down or get any kinds of hopes up. So it's kind of hard to go to that deeper level of a relationship with somebody. I mean,
yeah, I suppose, especially if the history is to, when you move, to not really have that muscle developed of continuing the relationships. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
I think it's especially hard with like young kids. I know not all of your kids are really young, which can make it harder to either let go or to deal with maintaining relationships. But it's even harder when you're like a little kid, I think, because you have those people who you enjoyed spending time with, who were your friends, but a lot of the time you spent with people wasn't having long conversations, mm-hmm. or something. It was going like on a play date or something. And that's hard to do over Skype.
Yeah, it's been super interesting. Our youngest has maintained a friendship with his buddy that lived across the street, you know, and what they would do when we lived there is they would just play together, right? Yeah. So it's not these long conversations. And now they end up on, basically like a Skype call, and then they're playing, I don't know, Minecraft or something together.
Yeah.
And that seems to work well for facilitating that. And it's interesting, every now and then there will be some little nugget dropped like, I miss you so much. Aww. You know, it's like, it's super interesting. Very different than when I moved as a kid. There was no sense of maintaining a friendship. I don't even know. Yeah.
Even for me, I mean, online gaming was definitely a thing when I was 9 or 10 and moving here, but I don't think to the extent or as widespread as it is right now. And I guess that might have been a something I could have done, but it's not something that I did do. And I wonder how different certain relationships would turn out with that being introduced. And I think it's really cool in a great way, especially when you don't want or aren't really able to have deeper conversations.
Maybe one more question that I'm anticipating will take a little bit of time before we bring the episode to a close. And that is, both of you have had the experience. Johanna, now you have had it twice and for a longer time period. Caleb, you back in 2017 of transitioning from your the culture that we moved into back into your passport culture. What were some of the things that you noticed when you transitioned back? Do you remember some of your feelings then? What were maybe some challenges transitioning back or some things that really stood out for you when you made that move?
I think moving back was almost like trying to get back into the culture in the US was almost more frustrating than moving here. Mm-hmm. Because when you move to a different country that you haven't lived in, you expect things to be different. You expect there to be clashes. And you come in with an understanding that I am not from here. So I'm going to have to learn how to be a part of this. And then going back to the US is like, oh, this should be easy, right? Like, this is where I'm from. This is what I know. And I think that's really when I most realized, like, oh, well, I definitely am kind of a Berliner now because I'm not really an American here. I am 100%. But the Pledge of Allegiance is really weird. It's very strange, like, especially with Germany having such a history of not, like, where now it's like very emphasized, like, we're not pledging, we're not nationalistic at all, to the point of like really no patriotism or anything at all either. And so going back to the US, the amount of patriotism to me seemingly sometimes nearing towards like nationalism and a concerning level, but that, you know, not everywhere, but it was definitely kind of a shock to the senses of, we're singing the national anthem at the high school football game. Cool. Oh, we're doing the Pledge of Allegiance and every day in school. This is very weird, especially. So
it wasn't just the change from being the German national anthem to the U.S. national anthem. It was from not singing a national anthem singing a national anthem, right? Yeah.
I am American. I'm an American citizen and like I am living in the US, but I don't have like a patriotic feeling for America. I want it to be better and to be able to like use my rights as a citizen to vote or to petition and all of that. You know, I think those are all very important and I'm definitely saying, yeah, go vote, go do all of this, but it's not coming from necessarily, I think, the same place of like patriotism, like this is a great country we live in and this is, you know, we're the best. Let me go sing the anthem again. It was I think one of the strangest things for me going back.
When we came back in 2017, we showed up in July into our small town, which I love, and all of the flagpoles were still very much decorated for Independence Day. And you just don't see flags, German flags in Germany, except on government buildings or
when World Cup.
Yeah. And so I remember even you guys saying, what is going on? Why are there so many flags everywhere? And for me, it was just, well, this is small town America, but for you guys, it was very foreign.
Mm-hmm. I think bringing it back down to a more simple level, one of the strange things to me was going back to the exact same town that I spent the first 9 years of my life in. And with some of my friends, I was able to kind of slot into that friendship group. But there are other people that I just straight up didn't remember. And they'd come up and talk to me. And I'd just kind of stand there as an awkward ninth grader and have no clue who they were. And they're like, oh yeah, remember when we played tetherball at recess in third grade? And it's like,
we had been gone for 5 years.
Yeah, it was 5 years at that point. And I had no clue who they were.
Yeah.
Or something I had mentioned in the last episode about not being an American in America and not being a German in Germany. Me and Johanna kind of fit in with the exchange students almost more than with the normal students there. It was this weird dynamic of being in between.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess agreeing and then going on what Joe was saying about not really feeling like American, I still feel like I want to be able to have an impact on America and on whatever is going on there and be able to make a difference. I think I'm very socially inclined. Something I want to do with my studies too is go into social work. And despite spending so much time in Germany, I still feel like the main place I'd want to enter a social environment to promote social change would be in the States, despite not growing up there for a lot. I mean, not spending a lot of time there and not having a deep experience with it. It's kind of like just this calling of wanting, like deep down, it is kind of my home, even if it's not my physical home or growing up home. There's definitely a better way to put that.
I will maybe try to give my perspective on this without talking for too long. Mm-hmm. And that is that here in Berlin, here in Germany, we can't vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so because we can't vote, the impacts or the differences that we make in the culture are much more hands-on and not political. And that also means that we identify often more with positions and ideas than with parties. And so I think that's often challenging when we re-engage into American culture, because we don't have parties that we necessarily identify with or feel behind. And the more polarized the system has become in the US, the more out of place I feel, because mm-hmm. I think more in terms of ideas or...
Which I think is also not just an us being from a different culture kind of thing. I think that's also just a more German or more Berlin thing, is to not vote inherently based off of what party your family or you feel you are, you know, tied to, but based off of your positions and your ideas. And
mm-hmm. So when you guys say, boy, I want to vote, I want to be a part of the system, I want to make the country better, I think that's also very much a reflection of you being a TCK. The lack of maybe fitting in is that you've been separated from the growing sense of you're either here or there. And to be good, a good American, you have to vote with this party or you have to vote with that party. And I see, really, it's a needed position that you guys have to be able to come in from an outside perspective and say, but what just makes us better? But that's not necessarily a comfortable place to come back.
I've never thought about how it would have influenced my approach to kind of social work, but the what you had said about how not being able to have any political influence in Germany does drive a more hands-on approach lines up with my personal idea of how to go about something like social change, being a much more hands-on approach. And I don't know how much of that is influenced by not being able to have any of that systematic influence that you can have when you're a citizen of the country. But
or by being raised by parents who involve themselves in that way because they don't have the political.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's an interesting additional dynamic that I never thought of.
Yeah.
Stephen, did you have any other thoughts or questions or comments as we kind of wrap things up?
I've enjoyed the conversations this week and last week, because I think there is something about the TCK experience where often TCKs recognize things in one another, you know, where it's like, oh mm-hmm. yeah, that's familiar, even though, like you were saying before, Mike, it's not the same experience. There's in our not fitting in, there's often a sense of fitting together or mm-hmm. feeling of camaraderie. Yeah, so I've enjoyed hearing from you guys, and it's been good.
Well, that was a lot of fun for me to have the opportunity to interview my own kids on the show. And that was due to an idea that came from one of our listeners. Thank you so much, John, for the idea. If you also have ideas or comments or thoughts about the show, you can feel free to send them to podcast@envisionberlin.com or join us on the Discord link you find in the show notes below. Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, is a production of I Am Intercultural, a division of Exigent Communication, in partnership with Envision Berlin. Please like, share, and subscribe. Podcast music is by Mike Piccinato. I'll edit it and make you guys look and sound amazing.
Won't take much work on my end.
Thank you.